And you tuned into Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. Good morning. I'm Mark Smith. This morning, I'll be talking live with Congressman Rick Crawford, who represents the 1st District in Eastern Arkansas. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Doing well. Let's start with Europe this morning. Europe's had a lot of economic unrest, of course. Italy and Greece face economic collapse and threatening the whole European Union, it seems. There's been talk about bailouts, but in this case, we're not talking about bailing out a corporation or an industry. We're talking about bailing out whole countries, and not sure where that bailout would come from exactly.
Well, I'm not sure either, but what I do think that it should be a pretty strong signal, a pretty pointed message to us here at home, that if we don't get our fiscal house in order, we may suffer the same fate. And I think we can avoid a lot of that by passing a balanced budget amendment. And I may have talked to you about this before, but I think that's going to be critical. I just don't think there's a better way to restore fiscal discipline, fiscal responsibility to our country, and avert any kind of a crisis that resembles what's going on in Greece and other parts of Europe, Italy, Portugal, Spain, wherever. We certainly need to get our fiscal house in order, and this is an illustration of why.
Of course, they are in a mess over there. How do you see this shaking out, and how does this affect us?
Well, I think Secretary Geithner has indicated that we should have no direct exposure to what's going on in Greece. However, there's going to be some market fallout. Mm-hmm. There's certainly going to be some response in the marketplace, and that could affect us here. And as it typically happens when the markets react negatively to a given event. But again, I just go back to my other statement. It should be giving us a pretty strong signal that now's the time to act on this balanced budget amendment and make sure that we're not ever in this position ourselves.
Of course, we got some unrest here as well. The Occupy Wall Street movement has spread across the nation. For the most part, protests have been peaceful. There have been some clashes with police in some cities. The protesters have been criticized for not having a unified message, but they are bringing up some points. And I guess the main point is the increase in income disparity. There's a widening income gap between the very rich and everyone else. Implication is, I guess, that the upper class is hoarding its money rather than putting it into the economy. The working class is facing fewer jobs, dropping wages, diminished benefits, and fewer opportunities. Is this just the way it is? Is this something that should be acceptable? Or,
well, I think the Occupy Wall Street movement is not unlike the Tea Party in that, they're upset with the current economic conditions. Maybe have a different perspective maybe who's to blame or where the responsibility lies. But quite frankly, if people are hoarding cash, there's a reason for that. It's because the economic climate is not favorable to investment. And quite frankly, we don't have the leadership in Washington that would incentivize that kind of investment that would empower the private sector and take us out of this economic rut that we're in. And quite frankly, I think that's what we need. We can do a lot of things and that would empower the private sector to get them to let loose of some of that cash. And there is a lot of cash on the sidelines. There's a lot of cash outside of the United States that could be brought back in if they would drastically reduce the repatriation tax, for example. I believe it's currently at 35%. And these companies that are doing business overseas, they don't bring that. There's probably $1 trillion or more in the economy that could be going to work in the form of investments that our tax code is preventing.
Well, I know Republicans like yourself call for deregulation, allowing the free market to work in our economy. But some of these protests blame deregulation in the banking industry for causing some of our economic problems.
Well, I think they're an easy scapegoat, and folks in the Occupy Wall Street are looking to sort of coalesce around a common enemy. But the truth of the matter is, investment in the private sector is what's going to bring us out of this economic rut. And I don't think we need to vilify those people who are in a position to invest and help us pull ourselves up by our bootstraps here. And I think that we need to incentivize private sector investment.
Well, the big banks and the major financial institutions are largely blamed for the a large part of the economic crisis we're in. Then they took a government bailout and then continued to give CEOs huge bonuses. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that the protest is about. The protesters are saying they've never been held accountable for their actions.
Well, and I think that you're going to find people on both sides of the issue that would probably agree on that point. I mean, I think that ultimately what's going to come down to is that shareholders are going to demand accountability. And if you've got a company, a big bank, or a large corporation that's received a bailout and those executives continue to get extremely high bonuses, to me that's counterintuitive. And at some point in time, those shareholders will make the CEOs accountable and will probably act accordingly.
There was a big difference in the bailouts that we did have, the so-called bailouts. When the auto industry, for instance, was in trouble, they also got a government bailout, but nobody seems to be complaining about that because the industry acted responsibly, used the money to get back on its feet, and then repaid the money with interest for the most part. Why were the financial institutions not held to these same conditions?
That's a good question. And I think that's something that probably is exacerbating the problem with the Occupy Wall Street movement. But, you know, again, if we have leadership in Washington to help address these issues and make sure that the private sector is acting responsibly, but the operative word is there that the private sector is acting. And right now we're in a holding pattern, and that's really stifling economic growth.
Well, of course, we're heading into the winter and the holiday season. Always a busy time for everyone as people are trying to get as much done as possible before the end of the year and before things shut down for the holiday period. What about Congress? What are you working on trying to get wrapped up over the next few weeks?
Well, I think probably the biggest thing is our balanced budget amendment that'll come up for a vote next week. And that's something I've been a strong advocate of and for, and campaigned on that and continuing to beat the drum on balanced budget amendment. And I believe we're going to see a balanced budget amendment that is very closely resembles, not identical, but very closely resembles the balanced budget amendment that passed the House in 1995 with 300 votes, only to be sent to the Senate and fail by one. And I'm hoping that we will see a good number of, we need 290 votes. I believe they're there in the House. I believe we can send the Senate a balanced budget amendment. But my biggest concern is that the Senate will politicize this and not act. I'm concerned there that we may have a problem in getting the 67 votes required to send this to the states. But this is a very pivotal moment in history. And if we fail to act, we fail. And I don't want to see that happen.
Well, of course, the president has chided members of Congress for not working on really important issues like jobs and the economy.
Well, you know, a balanced budget amendment is a pretty important issue as it applies to jobs and the economy. And quite frankly, I think that ought to be something that he's on board with, as well as not only my colleagues in the House, but members of the Senate. I think that is something that this country is has a strong thirst for at this point in time, and I think that's a message that ought to come out of the White House. What better balanced approach than a balanced budget amendment?
Balanced budget amendment would require massive cuts in a lot of programs, would it not?
I'm sure it would, but, you know, quite frankly, the situation that exists right now, whether we have a balanced budget amendment or not, the path we're on is unsustainable, and it's going to require massive cuts in the future if we're going to get back to a point. Everybody talks about we want to balance the budget, but what tool is there in place to make sure that we're on a path to a balanced budget? Right now, all we have are statutory measures. One of the best pieces of legislation, probably with respect to fiscal policy in recent history, was Graham Rudman in 1985. You know, it was going to be great and do wonderful things. It lasted about 2 years because statutory measures typically have a very short shelf life. This is fundamental reform that we need in Washington to make sure that Congress is acting appropriately.
Now, the House did pass a couple of jobs-related bills, both involving access to the capital for mm-hmm. business. Kind of surprising that both these bills passed in a very bipartisan manner.
Yeah, the two bills in question, H.R. 2930 and 2940, both of those very, very important to access capital for businesses. What that did was essentially lift a ban that the SEC has on advertising for small private capital offerings. So you're basically allowing John Q. to now get in the game. So instead of these startup companies having to rely on angels or hedge funds or, you know, private investment firms, capital investment firms, now everybody can be a part of that, and not only can they participate in this, these startups can advertise for their business without having to have had a prior relationship with this investor, without the kind of limitations that would keep most people out, or the minimum requirements that would keep most people out. So this is a good opportunity to empower investment and incentivize investment in the private sector. And I was talking with some bankers yesterday, and they were very excited about it, and real happy that we were able to do that. And as you mentioned, it passed a very bipartisan vote, so that's encouraging.
I'd like to see more of that bipartisan commitment to things that are going to move us forward. A very controversial issue in a neighboring state. Mississippians going to the polls today on a controversial referendum regarding abortion that even some conservative voices believe goes too far. Any thoughts on this issue in our neighboring state?
Well, I believe life begins at conception, and I think if you share that belief, then that's something that you ought to stand up for regardless of what some of the legal challenges may be. And so, from my perspective, that's how I view it.
Well, Jonesboro here in our own city, once again facing the loss of airline service in its airport. That's despite the fact that Seaport Airlines has been reporting fairly good ticket sales and increased demand for flights. Key seems to be to keeping this air service to the major hubs. Seems to be this essential air service subsidy. Is this, what's the status of this? Are these going away?
More than likely, and I don't know that they're all going away, but I think what you're going to see is the standards are going to be modified. For example, in Jonesboro, we're within a 45 to 60 minute drive of a major airport, so we would probably not qualify going forward. That's something that's going to have an impact on places like Jonesboro. However, mm-hmm. El Dorado, for example, may be a different story. It's much more prudent to put that investment there. The truth is we can get to the airport in Memphis very quickly and probably much more affordably than if we were to fly out of Jonesboro to Memphis. And so I think they're just trying to identify those areas that really need it and those areas that are, it's maybe more of a luxury item. And we're trying to do as much with taxpayer dollars as we possibly can, and with limited resources, we've got to be more prudent.
So the essential air service subsidy not necessarily completely going away, just being cut back?
I think that that's more likely that rather than it being just completely scrapped, that's a possibility, but I don't think so. I think what you're going to see is just a sort of a modification of the standards to determine who should be eligible for that subsidy.
Does Jonesboro have any other options for providing some sort of air service, maybe not to Memphis, but to other major hubs?
I'm not sure. This has been an ongoing thing for a number of years, and we just don't know what the funding model is going to look like. And I suspect that Jonesboro is not going to meet the criteria to be eligible for that.
Well, Arkansas has been, like many other states, has been in the process of redrawing its congressional districts, and you've recently commented on some issues with that process.
Yes, we found some discrepancies with the new map that actually we discovered back in I guess it's been about a month ago, and essentially there are two island precincts that exist in Jefferson County. And they had been part of the 4th Congressional District, and we don't know if they're going to continue to be part of the 4th Congressional District or if they would be moved into the 1st. In any case, there are several hundred people down there that essentially don't have a congressman, and so they're being denied their constitutional right to representation in the U.S. Congress. And we need to make sure that that's addressed appropriately, and that I think a lot of the problem was that this was the process was engaged in a pretty closed door fashion and a real hurry up type of a scenario to try and get the district drawn a certain way, and that's unfortunate. But the fact remains that those folks need to have a voice and have a representative in Congress.
Do you feel like this issue is going to be addressed in the fiscal session of the General Assembly?
I don't know what those requirements would be. I'm sure they're going to have to follow whatever the Arkansas Constitution dictates for the decennial redrawing of the districts. But it's going to have to be taken. And we certainly want to avoid any controversy at election time. And as it stands right now, this map will not pass legal sufficiency.
Lots of issues. Again, what do you expect Congress to deal with mainly in the next few weeks and in the beginning of the new year?
I think we're going to see, obviously, the balanced budget amendment is going to be pivotal. There's still, you know, the Joint Select Committee will report back before Thanksgiving. And that's an issue we'll have to deal with. And then, you know, my hope is that we'll start to see some action on the highway reauthorization, hopefully as early as January, so we can get that done. As you know, the House wants a full six-year reauthorization, which I think would be the most prudent thing we can do at this point. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to move on that pretty quickly.
Okay. All right. We're about out of time. I appreciate your time today.
You bet. Thanks.
Congressman Rick Crawford represents the 1st District in eastern Arkansas.